Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 515. This was Father's Day weekend, and I spent a lot of time with my son, who came into town from Los Angeles to see me, and he is going to join me in Podcast 515. We're going to talk a little bit about our adventure tonight, and a little bit of international studies type stuff, the British thing with the EU, as well as some trade issues, and just some general freewheeling conversation between father and son that is unique to our crazy stuff in this podcast, Podcast 515. So let's talk emergency service for plumbing real quick, because, you know, I hear all these plumbing company commercials, and it's always amusing to me that I think a lot of plumbers think that the average person is thinking about plumbing 24 hours a day, just like plumbers. But in fact, most people don't think about a plumber until they need one. And it's usually some kind of crazy emergency. Either there's water pouring out of a pipe somewhere, or the water heater completely breaks, or you have a huge problem at your business and you need to know what to do right now. And Greg Ryan and I were talking about this the other day, and the truth is that they have these stickers that they take around and they'll put on water heaters and stuff that have numbers, because that's usually what people do, is they call the sticker. And that, I want you to think about this, what I'm going to tell you is kind of a mental sticker, that if you need emergency service, whether it's business or residential, and really especially business, you know, whether you have apartment buildings or whether you run restaurants or you have two or three different businesses, or just one business, if you need emergency service for plumbing or heating or air conditioning, residential and business, you call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis. You can call 612-927-6488 in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. So pretty much wherever you are in the metro, they've got a plumber near you. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, for four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol. And if you go to ryanplumbing.com right now, they're running a special on water heaters. You can save up to $150. Once again, in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So we're going to milk the Father's Day thing for all it's worth. This has been a trying evening for a lot of reasons. It was a great day. We went to yoga, and you know, my son and I are constantly talking to each other all the time. We come out of yoga, and I never wear my shoes into yoga. I always leave them in the car. So I get my shoes out of the car, and I sit down on a storefront windowsill. And when I sat down, I put my phone on the windowsill. And I put my shoes on and I started tying them. And the whole time we're talking to each other. And at the end of me putting my shoes on, you go, "Well, I got to put my water bottle in the trunk." So I got up, I opened the trunk, instead of handing you the keys and letting you open the trunk. Oh no, I have to open the trunk. I open the trunk, hand you the keys, put the water bottle in there, close it, and then come back, and we just walked, and I left my phone sitting there on that windowsill. So we get to the sushi place, which was about two, three blocks away. The guy seats us. We get a great table outside. Everything's going good. We're talking, and we're talking about this and talking about that, and all of a sudden, boom, I realized that my cell phone was sitting on that ledge. So as you put it, I just got up and, you know, it was like, oh my God, I got up and I ran back over a couple of blocks to the, you know, the windowsill. And of course the phone was gone. So now I'm really upset. Now I have the insurance on the phone. I thought I had Find My iPhone. So I was like, you know, don't freak out. You'll get another phone and whatever. But immediately I flashed on some kids that were hanging out in front of this restaurant when I left my phone on this ledge, and they happened to be Somali, and there was some stuff going on, and I thought immediately, those bastards took my cell phone. And I came back, and we got into it. Very frazzled, huge fight. And about this, because you told me I was a racist, and then we come home, We tried calling it a couple of times and it was turned off. And then we got home. I don't know what time it was. I got home 9:30 or something. And it was later than that, wasn't it? The storm was just about to start. Yeah. And it had to have been later than that because it was dark. I don't even know what time it is right now. I guess it was about 9:30. And you decided to call the phone one more time to see if it was on, because if it was on, we could use Find My Phone to find it, supposedly. And the guy answered.
He did. He answered, and he was, you know, really friendly, and he was this random guy, I guess, who had walked by and just grabbed the phone and thought, someone will take this, so I'll just wait for someone to call, and when they call, we'll figure it out. So I was talking to him, and he was like, yeah, I'm over at
What was it called?
New Bohemia.
New Bohemia, that's right.
And I guess it was a bar over in Uptown, and so we, you know, we like locked and loaded, I guess, and got in the car and drove over there. We were going like 80 miles an hour down.
We were going 55 down Lake Street.
I was like, what is going on?
And well, I wanted to get there because I didn't want the guy. But then running in my mind was, what if this is a trick? They steal your phone and then they suck you in and they beat you up and take all your money.
So. Yeah, I think he was thinking of Scarface or something. And I was like, I've done Craigslist exchanges before. This won't be that big of a deal.
And it wasn't. I gave the guy $50 though. But I'm struggling to come down off that. Now, we were going to do this podcast out on the deck, but there's a big storm, or has been a big storm. And so I've opened up all the windows downstairs in the basement of the broadcast bunker so you can hear it. But now it seems to be quieting down. I'm getting a nice little breeze, cool breeze here. But again, we've had a really good time Father's Day weekend. And we did a radio show Saturday, which was, what'd you think of that?
Oh, it was great. We had a great time.
It's kind of, you know, and as I said on the radio show, you know, anybody who heard that knows what I'm talking about, but not the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. I sat in for this show, the Northern Alliance on the Patriot in Minneapolis. And, so it was that show. So if you don't listen to their podcast, you won't hear it, because I'm not going to post it on my page, because that's their deal.
But we took over for like, well, you were on for 2 hours and I was on for an hour with you, and we just talked and had a good time. We talked about Reagan. We talked about all sorts of stuff and kind of, you know, just what's wrong with the way that a lot of people are looking at things on the conservative side of the aisle.
And I did, I was, you know, it's all the stuff that I've talked about in podcasts, but I also made sure that I mentioned that there's quite a rift in the Democratic Party as well, which is not going away. And the Bernie people are getting more and more determined to have some kind of fight at the convention in Philadelphia, as are the Trump people. And we talked about the whole Trump versus the I don't know what you'd call them, the Never Trump people, or the, now it's the voting your conscience thing, and they're trying to change the rules at the Rules Committee. And I told you they were going to do that. They were going to change rules so that, you know.
You know, normally he predicts things, but he predicts like a lot of things. And so I'm like, well, first of all, you said like five things would happen. So if one of five you get right, you know, yeah, like kudos to you, but you're not, you know, a prophet. And then
no,
second
I
of all,
I don't pretend, I don't claim to be
no,
a prophet.
No, of course not. And then second of all, you know, I always say, well, you know, you're not the only person predicting this. You know, we've been reading about this as well. But in this particular situation, I think you really have from the beginning said that they're not going to let Trump, you from the beginning have said that they're not going to let Trump take over the party, and that there's going to be a big fight at the convention. And, you know, we've been going back and forth on it. And some days I agree with you and some days I don't. But in the last, you know, week, it seems that there's been a concerted effort from a lot of angles to start taking Trump down. And I think what's brought it from being just kind of a, you know, well, what if, to a, it seems like it's going to happen, is that there's now these delegates who are organizing and who have decided that they're going to try to make a stand, and they're using the media, and, you know, they're going out there and talking and saying, we're going to do this, to try to find other delegates and actually make it happen. And so then you have, you know, the senators who are saying, well, I don't know if we're going to be able to, you know, keep our seats, and we have to find another option. And then you have the whole Trump University thing just spewed back into the news. And now they're talking about RICO.
That's today.
And they're talking about how it's a RICO.
They're talking about RICO predicates for a civil case. And that's very important, because people say RICO and they think, you know, the
mafia. That's exactly the point, is suddenly it's RICO and Trump University instead of just Trump University. And so there's a lot of stuff that's kind of coming together right now that seems to be saying that they're going to make a stand.
I'm calling it death by a thousand cuts.
I think that's a good way to say it.
In an effort to just, you know, cut him down to size before he gets to Cleveland. This is not to say that he isn't going to get the nomination, or that he doesn't have enough delegates to get the nomination, but I think his position is a lot more untenable than he would have people believe right now. And I've predicted since the get-go that they are going to try to do something. Will they be successful? I don't know. But the one thing I did say on the radio, which I loved, was if they trot Jeb Bush out again, I'm going to wet my pants. And I don't try to, I really don't like analysts predicting the future. But this is something you and I have talked about. And we have these long conversations on the phone. And we've sussed all this stuff out for weeks. We've been talking about this, that we didn't think that this was actually going to this, that the other shoe hadn't dropped, and that there was going to be more to this than just the primaries. And I was shocked when Cruz dropped out. That there's something weird about that whole thing. And I think there's another piece to the Cruz dropping out thing. And by the way, if you're a Cruz supporter, and I said this on the radio too, they're not going to, the only guy worse than Trump, at least in terms of polling for the White House, is Cruz.
Well, I mean, off the record, Republicans, or not off the record, but excuse me, what do you call that? When they don't give the name, but they say it to reporters anyways, background, whatever that is.
On background, yeah.
Yeah, they...
or off the record.
A lot literally. Of Republicans, I mean, basically, you know, these Hill newspapers have reported again and again and again that a lot of Republicans who are insiders feel that they can work with Trump better than Cruz, and they dislike Cruz, and they dislike what he stands for, and they dislike the way he operates. They don't want to have anything to do with him, and they made a gamble on Trump, hoping that they could co-opt him and build him into a more, you know, stereotypical campaign.
Which has been the basis of a lot of our conversations, this whole thing is part of co-opting him, and I don't know where it leads. But anyway, we talked about that.
Can I just say one more thing, though?
Go ahead.
I think the thing that I think both got both of us kind of now onto the commitment to thinking that this stand is going to happen is the unfavorable poll numbers that we talked about. And they're really bad right now, which, I mean, we don't want to go off of polls all the time, but the ones this week with 70% unfavorable ratings, those are pretty intense numbers that mean a lot in the political world.
People should know. My response to that was, first of all, I don't trust polls for a lot of reasons. You know, when you see the same result two or three different times, that's one thing. And we've now seen three polls with high negatives for Trump. Hillary Clinton also has high negatives, although not as high as Trump's. But my suspicion is some of that can be reversed. And if he if he gets it back down to 45% or 38%, then he has just as many negatives as Hillary Clinton. So at that point, it's a moot point. I don't know that it means that he can't win the presidency. And this is the thing that really irritates me right now. There are two things that irritate me. One is he's the presumptive nominee and she's the presumptive nominee before a single delegate has voted. And two, and we haven't had the rules committees and we haven't had the conventions, which are where these things get decided. The media has decided and the quote unquote popular vote has decided. And how many times do you have to say, listen, you haven't been voting for president. You've been voting to allocate, at best, you've been voting to allocate delegates. And the delegates are chosen by various means within various states. And they either go to the convention bound by the rules or they go to the convention as free agents. And that may even change if they change the rules. So there's the first thing that irritates me to no end, which is referring to a candidate who has not yet been nominated as the presumptive nominee, especially in a year like this when all these things have happened. The second thing that irritates me is the desire and need to predict the future constantly. And we are just shy of predicting the future. We're just saying we felt that this was going to happen, you know, for the last 3 or 4 months. We've talked about it. We've had huge arguments about it to the point where we're both hoarse from arguing about this stuff on the phone. And so it looks like it's finally coming to fruition. So we talked about that, and I don't want to rehash that too much because there's really not. The newest information is the Trump University thing, which I don't understand that whole thing because, you know, if you're dumb enough to take a mail order class on real estate and you pay, how much do these people pay?
Sometimes they pay $30,000.
Wow.
Or more. Mm. I mean, I think most people didn't pay that much, but, you know, that's a lot of that. You can go to a private college accredited, you know, college or university for $30,000 a year.
Yeah, if you get a scholarship, you can go for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's the whole trade school thing. That's, you know, people are paying enormous amounts of money to get some kind of training. Sometimes after they go to college, they still have to go to some, you know, what do you call that? A trade school, vocational school, finishing school? What is that? What kind of school is that?
I don't know.
Well, you know, you go to school, you go to university, as a person we know did, went to a very good university here in Minnesota, got a degree in journalism and had to spend $5,000 of her own money to go to Brown to learn how to operate the equipment because they never taught her how to do any of that stuff. And she found out, unfortunately, after the fact, that that's what she needed to know. They didn't care that she had a journalism degree. They wanted to know if she could run a board or do audio switching or do camera work. And she, in order for her to become a producer, she had to learn to do all those things. So that's what I mean by that.
I think the crazy thing about the Trump University thing is, I mean, I saw the ads for it when I was like younger, and I thought it was a sham. When I was like 13, I thought it was a sham or whatever, however old I was. And I was like, who would do that? And then apparently like a lot of people did. But I mean, I guess.
So, but here's the question legally, and I don't have an answer, and I don't think you do either. But the question is, caveat emptor. I mean, I'm sure they signed papers that said they understood what they were getting into. So what's the court case? They're bringing the RICO thing allows people to have it allows a class action suit. And, you know, these reporters are dying to use RICO in the same sentence as Trump.
Well, right. I mean, and I think that goes back into this whole being able to make a stand at the convention thing, because if he now has, quote unquote, RICO, you know, allegations being made, and on top of that, you know, his poll numbers are underwater, and
yeah, maybe it's
you
not.
Know, they're
going to
lose
the
Senate. And, you know, This is all things that then these guys at the convention can say, coupled also with this idea that they don't have to vote with their states because they're, you know, by definition unbound. And I don't know if we talked about this
on the radio, but
there's this idea that, you know, there's this guy running around with this book and he's some Republican Party, you know, I guess I don't know if you want to call him an insider or not, but his book claims that, you know, he's done all this study on the process, the convention process, and that the delegates actually, by definition, are unbound and do not have to vote with their states, and that all of that binding is actually illegal and inappropriate. So I think all of these things are coming together, again, with this push to allow the Rules Committee to put in a conscientious objector clause or some variation of that kind of verbiage, you know, to allow these guys to get rid of Trump.
And so, in other words, well, maybe not in other words, but maybe the push of Trump University thing is not necessarily people that are quote unquote on the left end of the political spectrum. It could be even establishment Republicans that are like, okay, time to get our reporters and the people on our side to start talking about Trump University. So these are all things that are going on. But this isn't what you said. You said you wanted to talk about the EU and Britain, which we're gonna talk about. Well, if you've been listening to the podcast, in the background is a little bit of rain falling, maybe some thunder, and it's summer, and there's been a storm pretty much raging the entire time that we've been doing the podcast, but we're down in the basement in the broadcast bunker, and I've got the windows and the doors open, but it's not like when you're out on the back deck and you're part of the storm. But it is definitely summer in the Twin Cities, which means heat and humidity. It was super hot today. I love the heat. A lot of people don't love the heat, but with the heat comes these storms. And a lot of times, and you're going to see this as the summer progresses, storms with high winds and water damage and hail damage and damage to the exterior of your home. And with the storms and the storm damage, you're going to notice if you have a storm that hits in your neighborhood, you're going to notice people will start knocking at your door. And they're going to tell you that they can give you a great deal on storm damage repair. But suddenly, in the middle of the pitch, you realize that you don't know these people. They don't sound like they're from Minnesota. And often they will demand partial or total payment up front. And then they either do really shoddy work or they disappear. So what do you do? And again, here's another reminder. You call a name that you know. And here is the name. Cairo Contracting. 612-702-2357. Cairo Contracting. Ed Cairo grew up in St. Paul in Bloomington. Cairo Contracting is a Better Business Bureau accredited business. So because Ed Cairo is a local guy, you know that he's not going anywhere. Lots of friends and family and people in town as part of his, you know, community. Residential and commercial roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation. And yes, Cairo Contracting are storm damage specialists. And I gave this example before, but I got to tell you, a good example is hail. Because what happens is hail gets in and it deteriorates your shingles layer by layer so that they begin to deteriorate and you get these leaks. And so it is something that has to get addressed if you have hail damage to your roof. And if it's your parents' house in some place like Plymouth or St. Louis Park or Invergrove Heights, which I always mention, or West St. Paul, you know, they may not know who's coming to their door. And you may be a little worried about your elderly parents. So this is another reason to contact Cairo Contracting. For 15 years, residential and business exterior remodeling experts and storm damage specialists, the name you know when it comes to storm damage repair and exterior remodeling, residential and commercial. And you're going to be glad I gave you this name and that you remember it. Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. That's 612-702-2357. Cairo Contracting. You can click on that banner. Actually, the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, Cairo Contracting, has their numbers on it, and it gives you all the information so you don't necessarily have to remember it from the podcast. And thanks, Ed Cairo, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. But you wanted to talk about, I hate calling this the Brexit. It sounds weird. It just, it's like...
Well, it's easier than having to say British exit from 1,000 times.
But that's what it is. It's the British exit from the EU, and it's going to be a vote, and they're going to, you know... And other countries in Europe, by the way, have chosen not to join the EU. Or I don't know, has anybody exited the EU that was in it?
Not to mind.
Sweden or one of those countries that decided not to be part of it?
I don't think it's happened recently.
Switzerland's not a part of it. There were some countries early on that voted they
wouldn't. But Britain was one of the very early members and is a pillar of the European Union, even though they're not part of the common currency. But I think, you know, losing Britain would be potentially, and this is one of the reasons that people in the international studies community are so worried about it, is that losing Britain in the EU could be potentially a death blow to the European Union as an entity. And that's what people are worried, that if Britain leaves, it will create a domino effect where, you know, France might want to leave, or Italy might want to leave, or Spain might want to leave.
Is that so bad?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's very destabilizing. It's very uncertain. It's very chaotic.
Well, it's destabilizing to the financial community because they have to adjust to elements of it. But, I mean, the whole idea of the European Common Market and the European Union was the idea that treaties would create a more peaceful environment in Europe post-World War II. And not just post-World War II, but post-World War I. It was the dream of a united Europe so that we wouldn't have these kinds of conflicts that we had in World War II and World War I.
They call it the European Union Project, and I think the notion behind the word project is that it's an ongoing effort, and that the goal is to continue building towards kind of an international community of states. And this is very much against the march towards the European Union project. This is we're going to leave the European Union and do something completely different. And I think that's, you know, we'll see if it actually happens if they vote to leave. But, you know, it's very worrisome to people in the international studies community because this creates all sorts of questions that nobody really even thought about, you know, trade deals, about, you know, where people, you know, where these relationships will go, how the economies are going to be affected in Europe, in the United States. I mean, you know, breaking up the European market.
Is this a trend toward trade protectionism?
I mean, I don't know. I heard one guy on a panel for a think tank in DC talking about it, and this is a British guy. He's a business executive. He worked, I think, for some variation of their Chamber of Commerce. No, but I mean, he's a well-respected individual in the UK, even in the finance community, and he's arguing that it's better for the UK economically to leave. And he's saying because it will allow us to renegotiate free trade agreements, it will allow us to, you know, control the flow of immigrants more appropriately, you know, select for better workers, you know, get ourselves away from this crazy refugee flow coming out of Syria, which, as far as I know, is somewhere around 5 million people just pouring into Europe uncontrollably. I mean, I don't agree with those sentiments. I would like to see Britain stay in the UK, or excuse me, in the EU. But, you know, there is a compelling argument, I think, that kind of can be made to say that maybe they could do better outside the EU. Although I think it's a gamble, and I think for a lot of people in the finance community and in the international studies community, in the foreign policy community, it's very worrisome because, again, they don't really know what will happen. So yeah, you can make these arguments, but what happens, you know, the morning after? Do the stock markets crash or do they stay okay? You know, what does this mean? And I think no one really has an answer because nothing like this has ever happened before.
Well, this could be the trigger that, you know, there's a lot of talk in the financial community about either 0% interest rates or less than 0% interest rates, which is great if you're borrowing. But if you are trying to put your money someplace to earn interest, it's a terrible thing. And it's, you know, not, it's not necessarily good when your savings is losing money. So people are moving to cash. And, you know, this has all been in an effort to prime the pump and generate demand in the consumption and, you know, in all these countries, and it's not working.
I mean, I don't know how much of that I necessarily agree with or how much I've heard before from what you're kind of bringing up, but I can tell you, as someone who studied international studies in college, who worked in D.C. and who listens to a lot of these events that institutions like Brookings or, you know, Cato, I've listened to ones from Center for International and Strategic Studies, you know, whatever, they all have long, confusing names. But I think a lot of them are most worried that this project of internationalism, which is UN, EU, building stronger, you know, relationships between states that go across national boundaries, you know, there's a consensus, I think, in general in the international community that, you know, in some form, that's the right way to go. And this really draws into question whether that is where we're going to be going as, you know, a global community.
You know what question I think of when you're saying that?
What?
What draws in my mind is, and don't take this the wrong way, but my question is, those are fine things, all of those international agencies, which essentially, hopefully, can be useful at heading off armed conflict when there's disputes, you know? But what is a country, how does a country protect its sovereignty in an environment where they keep pushing on our sovereignty? We're continually, as nations, being asked to sign on to international, you know, agreements like Kyoto and its successors. We're consistently being asked to sign on to international agreements, which really form the framework for something like a world government. And people, some people in these countries, and this is where we get into the Trump thing and the so-called nationalism, in a very soft way, we could ask it this way. We could say, how does a country protect its sovereignty if it's being essentially trampled upon by all of these different agreements that may never even be put to the test of the voter, or asked, the Senate may never even get a chance to approve it because it's part of a trade regime?
Well, I mean, I think just to kind of cut aside all everything and just get down to the kernel of what's going on with the British exit, I think really this is more about a similar kind of bubbling up of populism like you have in the United States with...
I hate that.
Well, okay, so bubbling up of anger, discontent, disenfranchisement with people who feel that they've been left behind by globalization, by technology, and, you know, by these elite classes of people who live in cities who tend to be liberal, right? That's kind of a general refrain that you hear from people who, you know, in some way, shape, or form...
Do you hear that in Britain as well?
From what I understand, it's similar types of people. It's, you know, former manufacturing workers. It's people who feel that the elites in London in the finance community are, you know, basically getting away with all the money and they're left on their own.
They're giving away the store and they're giving away national sovereignty. So there isn't any more United Kingdom. There isn't any more United States. It's the world. We're collapsing our, are we though? I mean, I think, and that's a fair question to an international studies, you know, major, student, whatever you want to call it, degree holder. You know, are we giving away our sovereignty in these agreements? TPP, for example.
I don't know. I mean, I in general, I support free trade agreements. I think they're very hard to negotiate. And I think once they're put in place, you know, they have to be done largely, you know, behind closed doors because it's very difficult to get countries to talk publicly about stuff like that. You know, it takes decades to negotiate these things. And once you get an agreement, it's generally, on balance, in the United States' best interest to pursue them because we have high productivity and we benefit more than a lot of other countries from free trade. So, you know, whether or not some people are left behind, I understand that's a huge problem and we have to make sure that, you know, we can get everyone included in that growth. But at the same time, you know, once you get TPP or TTIP, something like that figured out, unless there's a really big issue with it and it's really been bungled, I think in general, it's a good idea to entertain the possibility of going for it, because we want to get into a market with as little barriers as possible to exporting the high-skill goods that we produce.
But I mean, what I think part of the issue is that we don't seem to benefit from those agreements in terms of the products that people are buying from us. And I think that's what's giving Trump the leg up on this trade issue, is that there are people that feel that we've gotten a raw deal in some of these agreements. So we seem to be giving more than we're getting in these agreements. And I don't necessarily agree with them being negotiated in secret.
I don't agree with them being negotiated in secret.
Constitutionally, the Senate is supposed to have advice and consent on that stuff. And handing them
document
that they have to basically rubber stamp is really doesn't sit
well
with me.
First of all, they have voluntarily voted on allowing, they give the president the authority to negotiate these agreements. So this is not like the Congress has been held hostage by the evil executive branch. They voted to do this. And the reason they voted to do this is because, you know,
because they're internationalists. It's
because it's so difficult to negotiate these deals that it's very hard to do it from the position of Senate or of the House. And so if it's done through the executive branch, I think the notion is, and I may be wrong about this, but I think the notion is that you can actually get to an agreement and then you can sign that agreement and, you know.
And this is why we have presidents, because then they can execute. Right. They can execute the agreement.
And I hate to take.
Unfortunately, if you get a bad president, he executes the agreement.
I hate to take kind of a jab, but I'm going to do it. I think that most Republicans would be fine with this if it wasn't Obama who was proposing it.
Well, I mean, you have Republicans like Tom Emmer who are fine with this, and you have other quote unquote moderate Republicans. And I'm sorry, Tom. But, Cuba, TPP, you know, not a Tea Party Republican, which he probably is happy to hear. But it's like, this is the issue with people that wanted Trump or Cruz, because they're saying, hey, you guys are selling us down the river is what's happening here. You're selling our sovereignty down the river, and we don't want that. And there are people that are saying we're against that.
I mean, here's the problem.
As opposed to the, quote, you know, internationalist group that's saying, you know, let's just make any deal. A deal is good. Let's get a deal signed and we'll work it out.
Well, that's not what they're saying. And that's why it's taken decades to negotiate. You know, it's these deals aren't rubber stamped in a year. And that's, again, why it's so complicated. And it takes that's why the president and his people and the authority that's been given to him by the Congress, that's why this all goes through such a long process, is because it takes a long time to ensure that they can navigate the domestic issues with the deal. Then they have to go and bring a deal to another country. Then that country has to do the same process. Then they have to get together with 12 other countries and go through that process again. And when you finally get to a common set of goals on a piece of paper that you've been working on for maybe a decade or more, do you really want to walk away from that? I mean, I think the issue is that people, because we have two oceans on either side of the United States, think that this is somehow not an international country. And because we don't, you know, speak other languages except for, you know, Spanish in a lot of cases, that we're just Americans. And the thing is, you know, this country is entirely dependent on the international system. We have goods imported from abroad. We sell our services abroad. Without the rest of the world, a lot of the stuff that's sitting in your house right now, the lamps, the couches, all that stuff, you wouldn't have for the same price.
You can have my couch.
So, you know, do you want to have a house that has three couches, or do you want to
have
a house
that leather chair
that has one couch?
You can have that cloth chair too, right. which looked really good when nobody ever sat.
I mean, I'm not trying to sit here and say that we have to constantly expand, you know, free trade at all costs, but I'm just saying, like, let's be realistic and look at what's created the prosperity that we have. And if you walk around your house and see anything that says made in China, you know.
Well, that's what people are saying. They're saying we should, you know, I think what you're saying is, if you didn't have, let's not even use made in China. Let's use made in Malaysia. Let's use made in Honduras.
Made in Thailand. Made in Honduras.
Made in Mexico. Made wherever. Made in Canada. You know, we import a lot of stuff from Canada too. So if you didn't have that, then your couch would just cost a lot more, and it would require more of your productivity to buy a new couch. So,
well, let's put it this way.
Wait a second, because I want to stay with this point, because I guess what you're saying is that the thing that, in your view, the thing that the for lack of a better term, populists, they're not populists, but the lack of that their concern is that they don't seem to understand that the United States has always been a part of the international community.
Well, I think there was a time when the U.S. was largely a domestic economy, and when we produced almost, you know, I wouldn't say everything, but we produced most of what we consumed. But the thing now is, it's like, when I went to college, we went to IKEA and we bought an entire room full of furniture for a really affordable price. I think we paid like $900 or something. Now, that furniture lasted a certain amount of time. I sold it to the kid who lived in the same room that I did after I left college. And I could walk into IKEA, and if we didn't have a free trade agreement, I would be able to get maybe one piece of furniture instead of an entire room. And that's, you know, multiply that out across your entire life. Do you want to have a new car every 3 or 4 years? Do you want to have a new car every 16 years. You know, do you want to have a new computer?
And not just furniture for your college dorm room, but all sorts of things.
Well, let me just say one thing, though. I mean, I don't feel like this is a left of center or right of center argument. I think it's just recognizing a reality that this, you know, you can't just chop off international trade and expect us to live the same way that we have for the last 10, 15, 20 years, which has been an era of growth inspired by, you know, this explosion of globalization of, in many ways, free trade and of, you know, these international markets. I mean, these are things that when you go to school for international studies, you start to see more clearly.
Well, of course,
that don't come through.
But you're getting chapter and verse their view of it.
Well,
especially where you went.
I went to a school with people who advise Republicans. I mean, one of my teachers is a prominent Republican commentator.
Yeah,
Benjamin Ginsburg.
Yeah, but a moderate or
I don't remember. But I didn't really
is he a Jeb Bush guy or
I don't really remember him like super well, to be honest. But what I'm just trying to say is it's not like this was like a, you know, an institution that you know stamped out people with a specific ideology.
So it wasn't Berkeley.
I mean,
or the University of Minnesota.
I just think it's difficult because our politics is very domestically focused, and that's great because a lot of issues are local and, you know, they're on people's, you know, it's on Main Street or whatever you want to say. But, you know, there's a lot about the way that we live that relies on our relationships with other countries. And a lot of, you know, the prosperity that you, whoever you are who's listening,
I got it.
You know, that relies on those relationships. And when we want to walk away from that because we're upset about, you know, Obama negotiating a treaty because he's Obama, that's difficult, you know?
Anything else you want to say?
No, I mean, and I don't want to take a whole partisan.
Anything else, the leftist crap that you want to spew out? No, I'm a free trader, and I do believe in free trade. I do have concerns about some of these agreements. It bothers me that they're negotiated in secret. It bothers me that Congress has ceded so much of its authority to the executive branch in these deals in order to fast track stuff. And what ends up happening is a president that you may not agree with, and it could happen on both sides of the aisle, by the way, could fast track agreements that you would, that as a senator, a Democrat or Republican or libertarian for that matter, you might want to hold up for various reasons. And that worries me. I think anytime you have a situation where the executive branch gains more power for whatever reasons, that's cause for concern.
But see, the executive branch didn't steal this power. The Congress totally voluntarily gave this power to them.
I don't care how they got it. They got it.
Right. I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying, like, let's be realistic about understanding what's happening and remember that, you know, this is not like Obama walked into Congress
I'm not talking
and
about
took
Obama.
This away.
I'm not talking about Obama. I'm talking about any executive that we elect. What's going to happen if Trump starts fast-tracking stuff that Democrats don't like, or Republicans for that matter? They're going to be, wait a second.
Well,
we didn't,
you have to vote on fast-track authority for separate, as I understand it, for separate trade agreements. So it's not like one time it's their power. So
right. But they
I think
still,
we're going to be okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think this is I personally think this is one of the core issues, and it's, you know, I'm probably not articulating it very well, but I think it's one of the core issues is the ability of the president to do things really without any recourse by Congress.
When I worked on the Hill in D.C., I received a lot of calls from people. I worked in three offices, and each office, it was when the TPP was being negotiated and the Fast Track Authority was coming up for a vote, and people called in a lot. And I say what I say not because I want the TPP to go through, but because I say what I say because there was a profound lack of understanding of what was going on, and no one seemed to put two and two together that if you don't do TPP and you don't continue expanding, you know, our relationships, our trade relationships with other countries, that you are going to lose the opportunity to achieve a new level of prosperity.
That's exactly, by the way.
And hold on, and let me say one more thing. And if we don't do that, other countries will. Other rising powers will.
Right.
And, you know, there's
that's
obviously
exactly what Tom Emmer said when I interviewed him in Washington in the truck. That's exactly what he said.
Well, and I don't know who else is saying that and why, but, you know, China will be increasing its trade relationships with other countries. Brazil, when they come out of this economic issue, if they do, will do the same thing. Russia will be looking to do it. And the European Union is also looking to increase trade relationships. So if we don't get in there and remain a center node of trade in this kind of global network of finance and economic relationships, we are going to fall behind. And that might not be a problem in 5 years, but in 30 or 40 years, all that aggregate growth that we've lost, that could really be an issue for us.
Well, I think we should go upstairs and watch Northern Limit Line, which is a really cool movie about North Korea. So we're going to do that. Do you have anything else you want to add? I'm exhausted. This has been really stressful tonight. It's been a stressful podcast. It's been a stressful evening. I was looking forward to a great evening of sushi, and I lost my damn phone. And I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at myself for leaving it on the friggin' sill. And then we got it back. Thank you very much for calling and getting the guy on the phone. But, whew, God.
Well, I don't know. All I have to say is, you know, I
got insurance on the phone, so if I lose it, I get another one. But still.
I don't know. We have fun talking about this. We go through ups and downs with our crazy lives. But, you know, I like being able to talk to you on the podcast because I think what we're both trying to do in our professional lives is bring a higher quality of coverage to these issues, and not to make it boring, but just to get beyond the kind of gross CNN, Fox, MSNBC talking points. And I think we've achieved that hopefully tonight by just at least bringing some other ideas into the equation.
And you have new stuff in the Millennial Project that you should actually mention before we go. You put new interviews up on the Hollywood Project thing. So don't explain the whole Hollywood Project. Just tell people what it is and where to find it on
basically
YouTube.
Wealthy residents who live below the Hollywood sign are trying to shut off access to the sign. People on the left are all upset about it because it's, you know, wealthy inequality issues, and people on the right are all upset about it because it's, you know, those elite people who live in LA who are the show business types are leveraging their elite muscles to do bad things. So both sides seem to be intrigued by it.
But then you have interviews with people that are involved, homeowners.
Right, no.
See, I don't see it that way at all. I see it as homeowners that are upset because their neighborhood is going to hell in a handbasket with all these people walking through.
Well, no, it's super interesting. And the thing is, it just got featured by Curbed in LA, which was huge. So it's got, the first video has a few thousand views now. And basically what we're going to be doing now is putting up all these interviews with residents who have all sorts of crazy and also sometimes really well-founded ideas about how these things work. They've invited me into their homes. We've talked. We've, in some cases, had coffee. You know, it's been really interesting, and so check it out. There's also some stuff about Reagan on there.
How do you find it?
It's on YouTube. It's called The Millennial Project. You can search The Millennial Project, and you'll see a dude in a purple shirt. The dude is me. Click on it. Watch all the videos. Subscribe. Repost it, etc.
Okay, great. Thank you. That was a good podcast. So now let's go watch that show. Love sitting in the park and watching the planes turn on final approach to land at the airport right over my house. And now that I know it, I see it all the time. They're adding power and watching their angle of attack as they turn on final approach. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. And what it is a visual indicator of your angle of attack, and it saves lives. It's FAA approved. They want to get it into your plane's dashboard today. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com and watch for them at the EAA Airship Show in Oshkosh this summer. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Once again, thanks to Ed Cairo at Cairo Contracting. Gonna have storms, gonna have tornadoes, gonna have hail damage. They can help you, and they can help you with all kinds of exterior work with your house, residential and commercial, roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation, and especially storm damage. Check out the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page or call Cairo Contracting Storm Damage Specialists, 612-702-2357, 612-702-2357. And for emergency service for plumbing, which it almost always is, you can try to think ahead, and many people do, and Ryan is great for doing all kinds of work that you need to get done if you're thinking ahead. But if you're looking at an emergency problem with plumbing, air conditioning, or heating, contact Ryan Plumbing and Heating immediately. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis at 612-927-6488. Also, check out ryanplumbing.com. They're offering a great special on water heaters. If you are thinking ahead, Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've been for a long, long time, for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And I just want to say, thanks, you guys, for listening to me on the Patriot at AM 1280 this weekend, both the show that I did for Northern Alliance on Saturday, as well as 4 p.m. on Sundays for the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, and listening to that show both on the podcast page as well as Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, and thank you for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. And just very quickly, thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Lots to talk about coming up with Mobile Podcast Command. I'll tell you all about it at thebobdavispodcast.com. Got to add one more line now, and that is please move down. Please move down on the scroll down on the page from the whole thing with Mobile Podcast Command and click on the email offering, because we're going to do an email list, and I'm going to start doing newsletters, and I need you to sign up for the email list. You click on that, takes you to the MailChimp, and you're good to go, and I appreciate you guys signing up for the Bob Davis newsletter known as the Bob Line. More about that later. Thanks for listening to podcast 515, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Andrew Davis and Andrew Davis, father and son, Father's Day evening podcast. Tonight, every street in the city ends up where I don't